Feeling stuck by a tough life decision? Wondering how to navigate career and leadership changes without chaos? Welcome to Problem Solved, the podcast where we cut through the confusion and turn uncertainty into action. I'm your host, Cheryl Strauss-Einhorn, and I'm here to empower you with a powerful tool, the Area Method. Forget overwhelm, forget endless Googling, get ready to make confident, well-researched decisions that take charge of your life. Whether it's finding the perfect college, the ideal career path, or the best care for your loved ones. This isn't just about theory. Here we'll tackle real-world scenarios, dive into inspiring stories, and equip you with actionable steps. So buckle up, listeners, because it's time to say goodbye to indecision and hello to solutions. Today on the Problem Solved podcast, I am thrilled to have Tiffany McAfee with us. She is the principal of Our World Neighborhood School, a charter school for kids in grades K through 5 in Queens at Howard Beach. This is her first year there, but she is a very experienced principal. Previously, she was principal in East Harlem of a middle school for 3 years. So, Tiffany, we are thrilled to have you here with us today.
I'm super excited to be here today with you, Cheryl.
Thank you. Me too. So, Tiffany, we start with the same question for most of our podcasts. Why is decision-making important?
Oh, wow. At the crux of it, at the center of it, everything's about a decision. You and I know we make tons of them. I believe you gave us a number in your first book around maybe, 40 to 50K a day. And even the most mundane things that we can think about, brush our teeth, to wash our hair, put on my makeup. All of those are decisions that we just make out of just all things. But in my role, especially as a principal and one who is dedicated to dismantling systemic racism in education, decision making and how I make decisions is ultimately important when I think about my students and my families. It's everything that I do. So I have to be super intentional about the decisions I make, and I have to be super intentional about how I make those decisions, because I know my why. My why is my students and my families.
That is wonderful. I'm so excited for this conversation to get more into that. So can you tell us, though, a bit about your professional background and how you became an educator in the first place?
Oh, wow. Despite how my young looks and maybe even my young sounding voice, I've been in education for 22 years. And I had an amazing fourth grade teacher, Mr. War. He passed away a few years ago from complications from diabetes. But he was a good friend of my mother's, and he knew my father as well. And so, you know, that was the added pressure of being in this man's class, and he knows my parents. And so he had me write this essay about Martin Luther King and I Have a Dream. And he said, you know, you have to rewrite it, Tiffany. And I'm like, why, Mr. War? I'm not going to win this contest, because it was a contest. And he's like, you never know. You never know. So he had me write that essay over 4 times. And I was so tired of going to his desk. But I ended up winning the essay contest.
Oh, wow.
And I knew from then that I wanted to be somebody's Mr. War. I wanted to be someone's encourager. I wanted to show young people that they could and what was possible, because he just encouraged me so. And every step and move that I made, I had Mr. War in mind. And that just kind of just grew as I went through my years in college. And I had an amazing professor. And she's like, you should be an English teacher. Because I told myself that I was going to go into the medical field and be an athletic trainer, even though the football team was snowy. It was horrible. It was horrible. And I was like, why do you want to do this? But you know, when you're at that age, folks tell you to do things about money, not about passion. That was the first mistake I made. And so then Dr. Whitson got me back on track to my goal. And I spent 10 years in the classroom back home in Illinois. And then I had a brilliant idea to join TFA after teaching 10 years, which is
Teach for America. Yes.
And that moved me out to New Jersey. And so from there, I've kind of been a part of the charter world and had a lot of different experiences, met some amazing people, just found myself as a teacher leader and just began to move swiftly into leadership until I am here now. I never thought I would be a principal, never, ever. I thought I would be in the classroom because I wanted to impact kids. But now I realize that being a principal, I actually get to impact 435 students and their families. And so the number of people I get to work with and be a part of their lives is beautiful. And I'm excited about that work.
That's a beautiful story. I can't imagine rewriting I Have a Dream. Just even thinking about that, I think would make me have some real trepidation. So you must have written something absolutely fabulous, Tiffany. Let's start out with your general approach to decision making. How do you approach decisions as the principal of a school? And how do you also ensure that the decisions are in the best interests of the students?
Yeah, that's extremely important. I think that's my first piece, right, is that every decision that I make is always with students at the center. So I'm asking myself, are students well and are they taken care of? Right? Because that's the center of everything. I mean, every single decision that I make as the leader of the school. And so if I can say yes to those things, then I can move beyond thinking about, okay, is this something long-term that needs to have a specific strategy or plan put into place? Or is this a short-term, something that is immediate? I need to, reach out and connect with in the short term to have an answer and turn around there. But I also like to think about making decisions and my approach to them, that nothing is a fire. I cannot be reactionary. I cannot go around just spraying water everywhere, because then I am not making a good decision already. If I'm thinking that way, you got to pause. And I always remember the words of my great grandfather. Right, I am slow to speak and quick to listen. Does not have to be this immediate response reaction. When we talk about making decisions, and especially with keeping the center around our young people and families, and also around my teachers, right? Because they're on the front line, they're doing the work. So I want to make sure that I keep those all stakeholders in mind when I'm approaching making a decision. And then, like I said, from there, deciding, okay, what path needs to be created, what has already been done in the past to support whatever the situation or the context may be. And then I always, the added layer is when you make some decisions and you stand back before you implement them and make sure that they are equitable for all people. They are accessible. That means that I'm not making a decision without some action, right, involved with it, right? I'm not going to tell you that, hey, go do X, Y, and Z, but I don't create an access point for you to be able to go do X, Y, and Z. And so then, especially in a school, because then everybody's looking at you like, okay, but how do I do that, right? So I have to think about my why, my families and my young people, my teachers, and my how. And make sure that I'm delivering these decisions, that are aligned to my vision of what great education should look like for every single kid. And that's that equity.
That's a beautiful process, Tiffany. So if I were to just sum up what you were saying, the first thing is the strategic stop, never rushing to a decision. So recognizing that time can always be on your side. The second is sort of the community or the population that you're serving. The third is the pathway. The fourth is an evaluation of how to interpret how the decision may have an impact, almost sort of thinking about failure. And then what I really love is that last piece, which is dovetailing outward to mission and vision. So thank you so much for that. So what guidance would you have for thinking about how you guide kids to learn from past decisions to improve or learn from their mistakes?
Oh, that's the golden ticket right there. that's the 100 grand question, right?
What kind of decisions are they making? Tell me that first. I'm sorry. And that way you can.
Yeah. I think that in my population, you know, the K to five, they are really learning what a decision is because they're making them every day, but they're doing them impulsively. So we have to get to the place where we are teaching them, like you said, how to make decisions. And it's got to be explicit. It's got to be explicit. So we do a lot of what we call restorative practices, where we talk about how to make a choice. I can specifically think about in my kinder classrooms, you know, they may go around and give kids, they're working on an activity and they're just passing out, you know, everyone gets 5 crayons and I'm just dipping my hand in here and giving you 5 crayons. And so we work on, you get what you get and that's it. I know it sounds like woo, but it, you know, we say that to them like, hey, you get what you get and that's it. And you're happy with it. And if there's a chance at your table that maybe you can share or exchange crayons, how do you ask? We talk about how we ask our peer, you know, can I borrow your crayon or can I, you know, exchange crayons with you? So that's something, you know, like really getting in their mind is that, hey, we can't always have what we want, immediate, you know, satisfying some of those impulses as kids do. And we don't have to cry about it, right? We don't have to be upset about it because it's okay. So we just try to be intentional about that ways. And then I'll think about on the opposite end, my fifth graders, we really try to think about being responsive and restorative when we teach them about decisions. For instance, I try to move away from any type of punitive measure when we talk about making a choice and a decision. So if you come to me, something happens, hey, Ms. McAfee, you know, Sarah called her friend a horrible name. And I'm like, why? Oh, because I was angry. Well, what are some things you could have done differently, right? So teaching them the alternative, really walking through that step and process. And then asking, letting them know why is important to pause before we say those things. Because they could hurt someone, right? So we're teaching them about the harm that their decision could make. And then we talk about repairing the harm, right? It's not enough just to say, hey, you made this choice. You might get a consequence from it. But how do we repair that, you know, choice that you made there? And we also celebrate, right? We celebrate because not every decision that we make comes with like a negative consequence. It could come with something positive. You've been on time every day. So you get to participate in our award ceremony for the week, right? So we recognize when you are making positive choices and how those positive choices actually build you, make you feel better, and also like build a community and you become a great role model for how to make a good choice, right? So we have our older kids talk about like, how do you decide to do that? Like, what did you do? You know, talk through their process with their peers. So we try to be really explicit with them at this age, because we realize that we are teaching them. And we know that this is not something that we necessarily was taught ourselves along the way. We definitely weren't taught it in educator school along the way. But it's definitely, we know that beyond the academics, we really want to ensure that we are cultivating beautiful humans. And so that's really important how we, you know, talk to them about choices and model for them. I have no problem, you know, if my decision caused harm, apologizing, right? And saying, I made this decision. Here's why I made the decision. And right now I'm looking back and I don't think it was the best one. So here's what we can do going forward. So I try to model that for my students, for my teachers, and then have them model it for, you know, each other as well. But I just try to be explicit as possible. In hindsight, you know, maybe there's some steps that I could write down and thinking it through, but it's just trying to just be intentional about what it looks like and having the conversations.
So that sounds wonderful. You bring the language of choice and decision making. You reward them for things that are positive that lead to positive outcomes. And I really like the restorative aspect that if there's a negative outcome, that yet another decision can help repair that. So that's really nice and terrific agency too. And so in learning from then past decisions, how do you then take that to improve and learn from those mistakes so that although they've thought about it in the moment, they're going to apologize to somebody. What is it that you want them to think about to make a decision differently next time?
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one there. Oh, that's a good one. Now you got me thinking, Sheree. You got me thinking. What I do try to do, I do want to say this, is that when it comes to making a decision that leads to a negative consequence, I do have students write things down. So I will have them maybe write an apology letter and state, next time I will do X, Y, and Z. I do have my teachers create what we call calm down corners with, you know, some breathing techniques. I can think about a little one that I have. He gets so upset sometimes, and we checked out a book in the library called Alpha Breaths, and we do the alligator breath, or we do the butterfly one, where we just open up, breathe out, flap our arms like a butterfly, to get us to stop and pause. But I do try to, anytime they come to me or to my assistant principal, we do try to make sure that they write something down and something they can take with them to think about next time when I'm in this situation that's similar. Here's some things that I can do to help me make a better choice. Or if I do, and I tell them like, hey, we're not perfect. We might make this same mistake again, but now we know going forward how to repair it and stop it. Right. So I do try to do that. And anytime I can connect some piece of literacy to it, I do as well. We read the book, Mr. Peabody's Apples, and talk about the words that we say. And, you know, can't open up the pillow and pick up all the feathers because they're already out there. Right.
Right.
So, so I think that's the step there, making sure they write it down, making sure they have something with them. I check back in with them to see how it's going. Do you have your list? I can think of one of my fourth graders. We actually had a morning check-in every morning to go over his list about the things that he's going to do and how he's going to make decisions. I think those are some steps that we definitely take to support young people and reminding them about the power of their choices.
So the writing, which is thinking, helps them reflect and internalize, and then also imagining a better future. Yeah. And also learning just some techniques that help with self-management and with allowing yourself time for a strategic stop. That is terrific. Walk us through, principals make so many decisions. Describe a time when you had to make a critical decision for the school. And you know, how you thought about this process for how the school was going to get through it well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in life, things happen and don't go so well. We had a grandparent, pass away, just out of the blue, was not something that the family even was prepared for, just unexpected. And I had to pause and say, how do I support this student, this family, and ultimately, how do I support my community through something that's so challenging and hard? Losing a loved one is something many of us are never prepared for. And as a leader, seeing how this impacted so many people, and everyone's looking to me for the next step. And I really had to just like first go through some process on my own. And I like I said before, I'm very slow to speak. So even though this happened and it was unexpected, I didn't respond like immediately, right? I didn't respond. I had to like take a pause, let it hit me first. And I'm gonna be very honest. I cried so hard for a good 30 minutes because I had an interaction with this grandparent. I talked to her often. I literally had a meeting with her 3 days before. And it was just like, how, you know, how do you? So this is something I never had to experience in this capacity as a leader, such a large loss and hurt. And my teachers are texting me and phones are going off. And I'm like, yeah. So I took a moment for myself. That's that slow that, you know, as you said, that strategic stop to really kind of get myself to process it that, yes, this is a loss that happened. Yes, this is personal. And also I knew that it had to, my response and my decision had to be personal, right? Like I had to share where I was with my staff. And I did. Once I took my moment to myself, I shared with them that I'm hurting too. But the great thing that this experience is taking us to is that we're going to be here together. Right. So really leaning into my own personal feelings. I'm never shying away from my own authentic self. That is extremely, extremely important to me. Just show up as Tiffany. And in that moment, while I am your principal, I am still Tiffany. I've always been Tiffany first. So I showed up in my humanity and say, yes, I'm hurting. And I know you're hurting. And this is a safe, brave space for you to process hurt in. So establishing some time and some space for my teachers, for my students to, you know, talk through the situation and how they felt, make sure that they were comfortable with that. So I did have my guidance counselor step in and go around to classrooms, you know, I had her do some office hours, provide a space for teachers to come in and also kids, right? Like the student, she was, you know, she called it her yaya. Her, you know, she was there. She wanted to be at school. She didn't want to miss school, even though she knew yaya was gone. But we made sure that we checked in with her, right? But it was about creating a safe, brave space. I'm pretty sure there was some decisions that needed to be made, some work that needed to be done, but that was not necessary in that moment, right?
Yes, sir.
To our humanity was. So all those things went to the side. And I think that is one of the toughest decisions that I had to make was to pause and be human in such a challenging space because the world still goes on, right? They tell you, hey, still teach and get out there and teach. We can do that in a couple of days.
Right. So also really setting priorities that were a group of individuals. There's always space for individuals and the process that they need, as well as for the community, then modeling that with all the teachers together and then modeling the individual space with the guidance counselor, allowing for individual meetings and recognizing that everything doesn't have to be done at once, that these decisions can be sequences that take care of the human before coming back into the actual curriculum. That's beautiful, Tiffany. Why don't we now go to something more positive? Schools are doing so many interesting things to create, you know, well-rounded, healthy humans. Can you share an example of a decision that you think positively impacted the school and how you made that decision?
Yeah, so I decided that, you know, testing, you know, New York State testing happens around April and May, and, you know, everyone gets all jittery and like, oh, the state test. Yes. We'll do all the back end things to prepare for it. Make sure that teachers are, you know, having the things that they need. We're preparing students and giving them strategies and working through the curriculum and all those good stuff. But we're also going to celebrate their innate genius. So I took an opportunity and said, hey, we're going to have a pep rally. You're like, a pep rally? I'm like, yeah, we're going to have a pep rally for our third, fourth, and fifth graders. They're going to create t-shirts that say crush the test because, you know, I love Strawberry Crush. And so they're going to crush the test. So my third graders had red shirts from Strawberry Crush. And my fourth graders had orange shirts from Orange Crush. And then our fifth graders had, I think it was pink. Or like Peach Crush. And so they all got to create and design their shirt, and it was messy and glitter everywhere. And teachers are looking at me, but I'm in big smiles because this is amazing, right? Like, I need kids to know that, yes, this is a test, but also there's no competition. There is no competition. It's you against you. That's it. You're showing up to show yourself how amazingly brilliant you are. And then my other grades, they made posters that encouraged them. They wrote letters to third, fourth, and fifth graders telling them they can do it. And we did a little march around. It was our a little march around the hallways because our school is literally a rectangle. And so we did a march around the third, fourth, and fifth graders, and my kinder, my first and my second graders are in the hall and they're shouting, crush the test, crush the test. And you know, my leadership team was like, so you want this? And then when they saw it, they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I'm like, yes, it is. Just ride with me. But they were like, we're spending $700 for t-shirts and we're going to do this, that, and the third. And you want a band? I was like, y'all lucky I didn't get my marching band. But yes, I wanted a marching band because my babies deserve it, right? They deserve all these good things. And I want them to know that they can be amazing, and they are amazing, just innately, just who they are. And so making that choice to say, hey, we're going to celebrate them, even though we don't know what the end is going to be, we're just going to celebrate them. We're going to make them feel confident. We're going to build them up, make them feel amazing. And that's where it all is. Like, if you notice the things that I talk about, just about building our humanity, building who we are first, right? That's making sure the kids are right and well, and they're cared for, they feel loved. So like, that's most important to me. And so when I'm putting all these things together and I'm making all these decisions and everybody's sitting at the table like, okay, she wants me to order what? And she wants me to do this and I need to find a band and all these things. I'm like, yes, this is what I want. This is what I want.
That's such a lovely example of the fact that it's important to do things that are challenging and to celebrate yourself for doing those challenging things. That is lovely. So, Tiffany, looking forward, it's now the time where students are out for the summer, but schools are still busy anyway. What sort of decisions are you looking forward to? What is on the horizon?
Yeah, so my decisions right now in the summertime are always about aligning my vision. I end my year with vision casting about what this coming year is going to be. And so my rally cry is forward motion. We're moving forward. We're going forward. We've experienced so many things since, you know, 2020, but we have so many great places to go. So it's about putting those numbers to those priority goals, determining those priority goals, putting the measures in place, putting the action steps in place. And I've made some big goals. I'll be honest, which they scare me. These big goals that I've made and said, got in front of my staff of 45, 50 people and say, hey, 100% of you are going to be proficient. And this particular element of instruction, and they're looking around and I'm trying to fight the urge to look around too. but those things are my decisions now, right? Like putting action steps into place, gathering, continuing to gather my data. I want to be data driven always. And I cannot have students meet outcomes if I don't know where my teachers are. So teacher input and drive student outcomes. So that's all my decisions that I'm making now. Priority, goals, measures, metrics for those goals, action steps for those goals. How I'm going to celebrate. I got to keep it light. You know, I got to celebrate the wins. Every victory begets another victory. What am I going to do when we don't make it, right? Like, how do I increase transparency and buy-in and get everyone aligned to forward motion? And I'm looking forward to, although June is past, I haven't received my June instructional report from the state yet. So I'm looking forward to digesting that data to help me as well think about the decisions that I'm going to make. But I am totally about moving my school forward in all ways to outperform our district peers, to outperform some of the schools in my network. There's two other elementary schools in my network. So that's personal healthy competition. I don't want my principal colleagues to hear that, but I'm about to, you know, leave them in the dust.
So let me just stay on this for one moment. I'm just curious about, like, what kind of data helps you with making decisions, and then what kind of decisions come from that?
Yeah, so one thing that I definitely use a lot of is student outcome data. I look at their end of year, their grades definitely help me, their assessments. My grades 3 through 5, I look at the New York State assessment from prior years and also the ones that they just took. That's the June instructional report. I'm looking for that big overpiece, which I haven't got yet, but I'm looking for that. And all that helps me to determine what my kids have been doing well and where we need more support, right? And then I align that to my teacher information, my teacher, you know, their end of year summative evaluations, because there is no way possible that I can say teachers are effective or highly effective, but my students are underperforming. No, it doesn't meet. It doesn't align. Doesn't compute. So I take that data as well and see, you know, in my walkthroughs and my observations, how teachers are performing and their inputs of what they're doing, and determine where I need to do more support and work, professional development for teachers, what areas we really need to lean in that's going to maximize the student outcomes, and also determine, like, the curriculum. Are we using the right things to get us to the student outcomes we desire? We should make some shifts in our literacy curriculum, shift some things around in math as well. So we'll see, did that work per se in coming state scores? But that's as well. And then we also have some internal metrics that we use with a system of testing called iReady. It's from Curriculum Associates. So I use all that data to really make some determination about my priorities. A lot of things, right? I'm a visionary. So I see all the things. Cheryl, my list is like 25, but I know I cannot do 25 things. So I have to narrow it down to those most impactful, those high three, right? 2 to 3. Usually for me, it's about 5, but it's really 2 to 3. I work on the others in the background.
Well, it sounds like this is such a lucky community to have you and your visionary ideas. What else should I be asking you, Tiffany? What am I missing? And what would you want people to know about what principals do, the decisions that they make, helping our kids to become thoughtful, compassionate, and effective decision makers as well?
I think you hit a lot of it, Cheryl. I think that the conversation definitely highlighted the work. And if I would say anything, we walk away about and talk about school leaders making choices, we really need to think about and ask ourselves, are our babies loved, cared for, they feel safe? And are we ensuring that nothing stops learning? And everything is an opportunity to learn. So every decision we make is an opportunity to learn. And if we can keep those things in mind, that our babies are safe, they feel loved and they know they're loved and they feel that they got somebody that cares for them. And they know that this is the place where they can just cultivate their genius and uncover their greatness. If you're not doing those things as a school leader, take a step back and reevaluate. And if you don't see those things happening in your school community, take a step back and evaluate. Because then we need to ask ourselves, are we making the right decisions?
Tiffany, thank you for this beautiful conversation, for your wisdom and your guidance. And thank you for being on the Problem Solved podcast today. Thank you to all of our listeners. And we appreciate and hope that you will follow the Problem Solved podcast and join us in the next episode. Thank you so much, Tiffany.